Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, September 18th. We're still not going to talk about the Epstein files on today's show, but we are going to talk about employer healthcare costs and what employers and employees can do about it. We can talk about it freely because we here on the Roundup are staunch supporters of the First Amendment rights of freedom of speech and freedom of the press. To freely express their views on employer healthcare costs are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchinson, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Overall, doing great, but a little tired, a little punchy. Just got back from a 5.5-hour drive last night from Cincinnati, where I spent the last couple of days at the Common Spirits Health at Home Leadership Conference. Fantastic event, great energy. Loved being there. I also wanted to give a shout out to my brother, Doug. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Doug.
Happy birthday, Doug. Aww. That's great. How old?
Happy birthday.
How old is Doug?
That's a state secret, Dave.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Older
okay.
than you are.
Oh, okay. Well, that's old then. Julie, how are you?
I'm well. I'm in New York this week with my team and a number of the companies that we partner with. And it's been a very inspiring week, that's for sure.
Well, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, right?
That's right.
All right. Now, before we talk about the cost of health insurance next year, let's talk about cheeseburgers. Yes, cheeseburgers. If you didn't know, today is National Cheeseburger Day for all who celebrate. Dave, you're a vegan or a vegetarian, right? When's the last time you had a real cheeseburger, you know, with ground beef, cheese from a cow on a highly processed bun? And do you remember where you were when you had it?
Well, it had to be in 2011, and I have no memory of that. I haven't eaten meat of any kind since 2011. But I will celebrate National Cheeseburger Day. Thank you for bringing it to my attention, Dave, by listening to Jimmy Buffett's Cheeseburger in Paradise song today. You know, I like mine with lettuce and tomato, Heinz 57 and French fried potatoes, da-da-da.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how about you? When's the last time you had a real cheeseburger and what were the circumstances?
First of all, I can't believe you don't eat meat, Dave. I didn't know that about you after all these years. But first of all, I don't eat cheeseburgers. I eat hamburgers.
Okay.
Which, you know, there is a difference there. People are devout about their cheese. And my burger consumption comes from one of three places. In-N-Out, just because it's so nostalgic for me. Shake Shack, because my kids have caused me to love that place. And this amazing little place on Mercer Island called Haps, which is like a quaint old gas station that's been converted into like a burger shop. So I don't eat a lot of burgers, but if I'm going to do it, that's one of my three stops.
Ah, I'm going to have to transcribe this and put it in a file somewhere. Those are good choices. Yeah, the first time I went to Los Angeles, everybody said I have to have a Tommy's chili cheeseburger, which I did, and I'm still trying to digest it. But it was a number of years ago.
I bet you had the chili dripping down from your chin as you...
It was quite a mess. But the last cheeseburger that I had was just on Sunday. My wife ordered the No. 7 meal from McDonald's. And if you don't know what a No. 7 is, that's two cheeseburgers, fries, and a pop. She didn't eat the second cheeseburger, offered it to me, and I graciously accepted with some leftover fries. So there you have it. I'm not as particular as you, Julie. And now I'm hungry. So let's get on to our topic, because the lunch menu at McDonald's opens at 11 o'clock. It's almost fall, so it's the season for benefit consulting firms to release their annual predictions for increases in employer healthcare costs next year as people sign up for coverage and find out how much they have to pay for it. I'm going to share the top line findings of several reports and get your reaction. Here goes. PwC released its annual health plan medical cost report in July. It said health plan medical costs will rise 8.5% next year for group plans and 7.5% for individual plans. The Business Group on Health released the results of its annual employer health care strategy survey in August, It said employers' health care costs would rise 9% next year, absent any health plan redesigned by employers. Mercer released the results of its annual National Survey of Employer-Sponsored Health Plans earlier this month. Mercer said the total health benefit costs per employee would rise 9% next year, absent any health plan redesigned by employers. Aon released the results of its annual survey of employer healthcare costs last week. Aon said employer healthcare costs per employee will rise 9.5% next year, absent any actions by employers. On top of all that, let's throw in an 18% increase in the median premium for ACA plans bought over federal and state health insurance exchanges. That's according to a report from the Kaiser Family Foundation released last month. And there's lots of blame going around. Topping the list are higher prices charged by providers, higher utilization of medical services by consumers, higher drug costs, and everyone's favorite, the cost of covering GLP-1 drugs. The benefit consulting firms, of course, are self-interested. They want employers to hire them to manage their health benefits. But Dave, what if employers hired you to manage their health benefits? What are one or two things you would do to bring those big increases back to reality?
They are big. The Journal had an article on this last week that got my attention. The WTW, Willis Towers Watson, sounds like a public radio station. Yeah. Do we have those anymore? But anyway, the WTW survey is saying we're going to see the highest rate increases since 2011 in 2026. So 15 years, that's coming on top of above inflation increases the last 2 years. And so we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 28 grand for a family plan. And that's without tariffs. Just kidding. So these are massive, massive numbers. I love the quote in the Journal article from Sean Greminger, who is Mike Thompson's replacement at the National Alliance of Healthcare Purchaser Coalitions, who are right in the bullseye of these increases. And he said the reaction from employers to these increases ranges between upset, shocked, freaked out, and resigned. Well, you know what, employers? It's time to put on your big boy and big girl pants and actually become better buyers of healthcare services. Demand more value for your purchasing. So you've hired DJ Consulting to come in. The first thing's going to be a tough love lesson. It's not enough to just change plans. You have to actually change your approach. So number one, get a transparent PBM. You know, the big three have been ripping you off for years. Go to transparent PBM. Your employees are going to love it. It'll save you money. And then there are all kinds of new models coming out that are digital first platforms that flood the zone with primary care, that have prearranged contracts for specific procedures with high value providers. Some plans have all the primary care you want, and then the company pays for high deductible plans for their employees. So you can get access when you need it at more reasonable prices. But basically, just stop it. Just stop doing it. I understand that providers in many markets have monopoly pricing power and they use it. I also understand that many markets, payers have monopsony pricing power and they use it. You've heard me say time and again, upcoding and denials are different sides of the same coin. So a pox on both their houses. And revenue cycle is fueling a lot of this increase. It's nobody's really looking for value. They're just trying to figure out how to play the game better, how to do denials better, how to upcode, how to get more payment for whatever services you're providing. It's not a value-based equation at all. And to the payers and providers out there listening, what's happening is these price increases are putting, it's the equivalent of putting more air into an already overinflated balloon, and it's starting to pop. And as Bob Dylan said, a hard rain's going to fall because the value for these prices is almost non-existent, right? We've got self-insured employers paying premium prices for largely commodity services. And I think the marketplace overall is starting to organize in ways to really deliver value to self-insured employers. So stop whining, start figuring out how to become better buyers, and do it for yourself, do it for your employees, do it for your country. This is just nonsense.
Yeah, the solutions are out there, right? You just have to reach out and grab them. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
We're going to say a lot of the same things today, but I didn't hear you talk about GLP-1s at all in this. How worried are you that GLP-1s will continue to be such a big cost driver with the, you know, risk of compounding pharmacies today and the fact that pills are like now out and coming down the pike? Are we just in some innovation bubble around this, or is this going to continue to be a massive cost driver?
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, Lilly was out with a trial this week on pill form of GLP-1, and it evidently in the trial with diabetes patients lowered blood sugar more and increased weight loss more than the injectable forms. And it's a pill, right? So though people are freaked out about, you know, taking injections, now we'll have an easy way to do this. How do I look at this? I think the GLP-1 is another version of the Aduhelm,
that's Alzheimer's, right?
The mass-produced drug that
it was
forced Medicare to actually increase its projections for spending. It turned out to be a crappy drug, and so the problem to some extent went away, partly because employers refused to pay for it. Here we have very good drug, but with the same type of mass market appeal, and we know the manufacturing costs of doing this are really inexpensive. So what economists call the supplier surplus is enormous, astronomical, extortionary even. And I just don't think we can have this type of event come into the system without some brakes being put on one way or the other. I think if the industry were smart, it would try to be proactive in designing how to blunt the financial costs of the drugs coming in. There's just no way that we can meet the demand at the current pricing levels, and something's going to give.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Julie, I'm just glad you said coming down the pike versus coming down the pipe.
The pipe. Oh. I'm not good at these things.
Yeah, don't get me started on champing versus chomping on the bit. So, all right, it is your turn. Instead of employers hiring PwC, Mercer, or Aon, they hire you. What are the one or two things you would do to bring those projected cost increases down to earth?
Well, first, just to set a little context, I had breakfast with Brent Pilecki, who's the chief health officer of Wells Fargo Monday. He's an amazing guy and one of those leaders in the employer space, who's so thoughtful. And it just sounds like blocking and tackling going on out there with employers. It's not a happy scene. And every Blues plan I've talked to in the last 2 to 3 months around the country everywhere seems to be in some sort of state of shock about the dramatic rise in cost trend and what they're going to do about it. And you hear all the time, well, health systems are now using AI to charge more. Well, okay. And health systems are jacking rates. Well, that's definitely happening in some areas for sure. And GLP-1s, those are the three things I hear all the time. So I think what we're talking about today is kind of right on. First, I'm like with Dave, a quarter of our healthcare spend in 2024 was on pharmacy, and employers are anticipating another 11 to 12% increase this year and next year. So we've got to move beyond plan design. And I would also take a hard look at my PBM and how to put a more transparent solution in place that basically doesn't even just reduce reliance on rebates, like gets rid of that rebate game and all the kind of OP pricing. And I know that this alone won't solve the problem, but employers can control this and they can put themselves in a better position. And yes, should they be also advocating government? Sure. I keep doing that too. I personally am not so sure that Trump's not going to whiff again on, drug prices and Trump too, but I would absolutely go down that road. So Dave, great minds. Second, cancer continues to be the top condition that's driving healthcare costs. And, we're just seeing continued increase in cancer diagnoses and, continued increase in the cost of treatment. So if I were in the seat, I wouldn't say that I would focus on cancer alone, but cancer is one of the most sophisticated disease states and, you know, all parts of our system working together on cancer. Well, not together, but working on cancer. So things, whatever you could deploy in cancer, you could largely replicate in a lot of other areas. And I'm seeing a lot of employers turning towards better navigation tools and centers of excellence. And it looks like about half the employers are offering a centers of excellence product next year in 2026, and another quarter are considering doing so by 2028. So the centers of excellence concept is getting a lot of play again, and we go through waves of this. So between this and high performance network models, you know, it seems like you could actually impact a lot. Employers are definitely getting more serious about screening, covering screenings, you know, getting rid of age requirements, funding alternative screenings, like alternatives to colonoscopies. So there's a lot they can do there too. But I guess I would say that the technology exists today to more personally navigate everybody towards the types of solutions that are also available on the market. So I know I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but I know that the two of you know this reference. As the $6 million man said, we have the technology.
How much would the $6 million man cost today? Let's see.
Oh, my God.
We can make him better than before, right?
We can build it.
That's right. Yeah, use your purchasing power and be smart, right? It's not that complicated. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, I'm going to ask Julie who the greater villain is, payers or providers, but as you were going through your list of new technologies on diagnostics, Julie, I wonder if you're seeing anything on radiopharmaceuticals. I think that we may be on the cusp of being able, for example, in cancer, using the radiopharmaceuticals to light up the entire body, identify every tumor, and then as the treatment goes on, look at effectiveness after each treatment, as opposed to the way we do it now, where you get blasted with chemo or radiation for 6 treatments and then see whether or not they're working.
I do think that that whole area leads us towards personalization in a very kind of practical way, right? So yeah, I definitely have faith that that's going to get us much farther. I'm also seeing on kind of my side of the fence, things like Function Health just launching their full body MRI as part of their offering. So you're going to start to see, you know, full body identification. And then to your point, radiopharmaceuticals to get more personalized, specific treatment.
All right. But Julie, I can't let you off the hook. If you're going to complain, who gets more of it, payers or providers, or is it a pox on both their houses, like I said?
Listen, Dave, you know that I'm not in the blame game, but let me remind you of my favorite quote from the aftermath of the Brian Thompson murder. No snowflake is responsible for the avalanche. So on the health system side, like, you know, so health systems are using AI to boost revenue. Is it fraudulent? No. Like AI is bringing to their attention all the underbilling they've been doing for years. So they have every right to use tools like that. And what I see happening is transparency is coming our way. We're going to see more and we're going to see it faster. So, you know, whether that's health plans or health systems or pharmaceutical companies or however, we're going to be in a kind of a different playing field. I personally would love to see health plans, you know, engage more. Engagement would go a long way, and the technology exists to do that as well.
I may have to rethink my approach to cheeseburgers.
No more cheese, evidently.
Yeah, maybe the number 7's off the table now. We'll see. Now let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this week. Julie, what else happened this week that we should know about?
Well, I know not everyone's probably following this, but yesterday the NCQA announced Vivek Garg as the new CEO. And if you don't know Vivek, he's an incredible mission-oriented physician leader who's been at Humana and, you know, many of the small innovative health plans and care delivery models. And he's just such an incredible person. So I can't wait to watch him work.
Yeah, I saw that. Great choice. Dave, what's your big story of the week?
Oh, I can't take my eyes off the shootout at the CDC corral. Susan Menares was in Congress testifying this week that RFK was trying to get her to pre-accept all of his vaccine recommendations. You know, that panel is going to come out with their recommendations None of it seems to be based on real science. So that's going on. And just to add cruelty to the mix, the CDC is forcing all its workers to come back and work in the building, even after the attack on the building last month. So, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but it's like watching a catastrophe in real time unfold before our eyes. So there you go.
Yeah. What I did after that, I downloaded the vaccine schedule for infants, children, adolescents, and adults. And I have that now hanging on my wall on paper, Dave. I'm sorry. But, you know, how long is that going to be available? Right. So I would urge everyone to do that before it disappears. So thanks, Dave. And thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.